This Week in Free Energy.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. This is Sterling Allen, your host. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net and every day at freeenergynews.com. Our guest today is Troy Helming, the CEO of Crystal Planet and author of The Clean Power Revolution. Crystal Planet is a company that specializes in distributing through a marketing plan various clean energy technologies. Troy has been in clean energy for a long time, starting with wind power, and has a lot of interesting approaches to how to disseminate free energy and concepts in his book. We're glad to have him on our show. Thanks for joining us, Troy.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Sterling. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. I should also mention that Troy is a founding member of the New Energy Congress, which we started about a little more than a year ago, and he's been a contributing member of that. Had great input and insight to help grow that organization as well. So I also count Troy Helming as a personal friend, even though we've not met in person yet.
Well, I'm sure we'll get around to that one of these days. And I do have to say it's been a pleasure and an honor being part of the New Energy Congress. A lot of interesting and innovative technologies that we get to check out kind of on the cutting edge.
Yeah, it is. Well, talking about interesting and cutting-edge energy technologies, that's what your company is designed to promote, and we're talking about technologies that have reached market availability that people can purchase right now, and you make them available through a network. I read your recent, I actually got involved in the company myself, signed on as an associate of some kind. I haven't worked it very hard because it would take a lot of work to do that, and as you can imagine, my hands are quite full, but I do get somewhat of a glimpse into the workings of the company because of that. And I did receive a mailing this last week, actually, that talked about how you're moving away from kind of an MLM approach closer to more of a, can't remember the wording, but the idea was that people need to be able to have a pretty good idea what we're talking about when they're promoting this technology.
Sure.
It's not something
yeah.
you can just bring something on really quick and they can, you know, they're ready to rock and roll.
Exactly. And we really found that some of these new technologies and also the larger ticket items like wind and solar and biofuels that we sell they really don't lend themselves very well to a network marketing or multi-level marketing approach, even though that type of an approach allows just about anyone to get involved, and if they work it hard can be successful. It also comes with, you know, quite frankly, some baggage and a little bit of a negative connotation. So we've moved to a direct selling approach, which is really more like a more corporate sales associate with sales managers. There's no more, you know, network or downline or any of that type of thing. It's just simply you can be a sales associate of these products, and or if you become trained, you can be a sales manager and earn an override on a sales team, but that's where it would stop. There would be no more downline or, as some people say, pyramid. And you're right, Sterling. It's important that the products that are being developed out there and become commercialized have a market, and that's, I think, where we feel like we fill that niche. It's a common theme in the invention world. As you know, some exciting new products come online or developments and ideas, one of the two things that they're lacking is a marketing arm. It's usually funding and then marketing or business acumen to get those products out into the marketplace. And so we feel like that's really our mission and our role to play in what I like to call the clean power revolution, is to be that source for the new products that are coming online. And, of course, we try to focus on being one of the lowest cost providers of those products to keep the, you know, energy costs down. And we try to focus on products that have a good return on investment and keep a profit in this new, you know, this new movement of clean energy, try to keep as much profit as possible in the hands of individuals, as opposed to the, you know, the larger companies that are also trying to get involved in this, in this massive shift of wealth.
So basically, what you have to offer is, for a new technology that comes along, is a ready established, already established group of customers and sales agents who know the field of energy and understand the nuances of the field to be able to basically wrap them around that new technology, ready to go with dissemination of that technology.
That's right. And to operate a sales type of a business like that, and in a way you're kind of like a manufacturer's rep, but to operate that, the costs are very low, and we try to make it you know, fairly simple and straightforward for anyone to do on a part-time basis or a full-time if they want to get more serious about a clean power career. But we try to keep the cost minimal, you know, $20 or $30 a month to have an e-commerce system, you know, with a shopping cart and your website and being able to buy products at wholesale to try them out yourself and then resell them at retail, or you know, just simply refer customers to your own website anywhere, really almost anywhere in the world, and then they can buy those products. With really now our focus, though, is on what we call the big three: wind, solar, and biofuels, because those are the ones that are, you know, of everything out there, they're, I guess, a little more mainstream in the alternative energy world, if you can call them mainstream, and I think you can. It's really, in my opinion, no longer alternative. But those are the three that have the most readily accepted, you know, marketability, I think.
Mm-hmm. Give us an idea of, as we start out this interview, a quick thumbnail survey of the products that you make available, and also maybe a little bit about the size of the organization.
Okay. Well, Crystal Planet today has approximately 1,200 independent sales associates and about 25 sales managers. We have presence in all 50 states and a number of other countries, including, I think, most of the Canadian provinces now. And so that's kind of a sense of our size. We are a small company, though. That number sounds like a big number. Most of those folks are part-time. And so really, you know, we're a small company. We may do about $3 to $4 million in gross sales this year with those products. Now, that does not include, we've got a couple of larger renewable energy project developments that we do under a sister company named Pristine Power. But that's, in a sense, the size. The types of products, to answer the other part of your question, they're fairly diverse in terms of the add-on. I did mention, you know, the big three: wind, solar, and bio. And I'll start with wind, because that's really what got me into you know, the renewable energy field as a career. I mean, I grew up in a solar-powered home. My dad built a home in 1981. And it was one of the first of its kind in the Kansas City area. It had a solar thermal system with 30 panels and heat exchangers to, you know, transfer the heat into the pool, the hot tub, and the domestic hot water, as well as heat all of the air in the home in the wintertime. But
I could, and just mention that, sure. I also had the privilege of being raised in a home where my dad was a forward thinker. We had solar, you know, long before when solar was just barely. When solar was alternative, it was really out there on the cutting edge. It was a new concept. It was still kind of cutting teeth, so to speak. And I can understand what it's like to be able to have that upbringing. So go ahead.
You bet. Well, we're brothers in kind, I guess. So, you know, I guess because of that, I had the exposure to renewables from an early age, and I knew that, you know, it was not only sensible from an environmental perspective and energy independence perspective, but also economically it made sense. And so when I read an article in 1998 about wind energy, that's really what intrigued me, because at that time solar power was still, quite frankly, just wasn't economically feasible unless you were fortunate enough to live in a state or a country or an area where there were significant incentives or rebates. And so wind energy, though, was something we have a lot of here in Kansas, or at least a lot of wind. And so I really got excited about it and started a wind development company in 1999 and have been involved in wind ever since. Well, fast forward to the present time, just about 6 months ago, a new wind turbine was finally began shipping from a company called Southwest Wind Power out of Flagstaff, Arizona. And many of you listeners have probably heard about the company. They are considered one of, if not the, one of the top-selling small wind companies in the world. I think they've got over 70,000 wind turbines that they've sold worldwide. But they spent millions of dollars. I think the last figure I heard was over $5 or $6 million in about 4.5 to 5 years developing their SkyStream wind turbine. And it's a what I would like to call a disruptive technology in the wind space because it's so cost-effective. The installed price is usually somewhere between $10,000 and $14,000, and it will generate, even though it's only rated at 1.8 kilowatts, it's an AC output turbine, so you don't have the losses associated with the inverter, 60 hertz, 240 volts, or 120. And it's designed to be grid connected, and that's probably our most exciting product right now. We're selling a lot of it. We've got, I think, 22 or 23 sales under contract around the Kansas City area and out in the Northeast. And that, by the way, it'll put out, I forgot to mention, anywhere from 400 to 650 kilowatt hours a month for that price. So the payback is certainly less than 10 years, and in some areas with decent wind or higher electric rates can be 5 years or even shorter if there's some state rebates. So that's kind of the leading product with wind. We're also evaluating a number of vertical access wind turbines. Unfortunately, most of those manufacturers have been struggling to really commercialize those products and keep the prices down and the efficiencies up. But we do go in and for a potential customer, we'll look at their wind resource, their solar resource, and sometimes geothermal resource, and or if they're in the Northeast, we might look at a combined heat and power type of a system. But we go in and we give them a payback analysis, a return on investment, and we offer financing. So we make it easier to get into these things. For example, the SkyStream is generally owed somewhere between $200 and $250 a month on a five-year lease-to-own program, where at the end of the lease they own the system for a dollar, and it's going to have an expected life of around 20 to 30 years with a warranty of 5 years. So that's wind. Do you want me to talk a little bit more about solar as well, or biodiesel?
One quick question. Is your target audience or clientele residential primarily, or do you also address commercial?
Well, we do both, but due to the nature of our sales force, most of them are not highly trained in B2B, business-to-business sales. So I would say we've only got about 10 or 15 of our 1,200 sales associates that feel confident enough and proficient enough at business sales. However, having said that, those folks are fairly active, and so we do have a number of the SkyStream turbines that we have sold and or installed at small businesses or farms or even large companies that would have a small application. Like, for example, we're in the process of doing one at a cellular tower. It's a business that owns a bunch of cellular towers, and they lease out their tower space to all the big cellular or wireless companies. And they're interested in doing a wind, solar, and hydrogen type system. And so we're, so yes, we do some of that on a commercial scale. And we also are developing right now a couple of what you might call industrial type projects that are like a big agribusiness company here in the Midwest is looking to buy hydrogen from us that we will produce using wind energy and wastewater from their cooling tower. And they've signed a 15-year letter of intent with us, and we hope to I'm under confidentiality, so I can't talk about the name of the company, but we hope to be able to publicly announce that in the next 60 to 90 days. And then I can talk publicly, though, about a 5-megawatt wind project we're developing for a big cattle company called Rolling Plains Cattle Holding, and it'll be enough energy to power all of their grain mills and their facilities for a big cattle operation that they have. So to answer your question, yeah, we do some of those projects, but what we don't do, we don't get into the large wind farm development where you sell to utilities. That we're leaving for the big boys.
The thing that actually got me involved was you had some kind of a system, a green tag type of system where you buy into, pay a certain amount a month, and it goes toward the installation of one of these larger wind turbines in a school or some kind of a larger setting, And then if you got a certain number of people to sign up underneath you, then your amount was paid. And there's an incentive, a downstream incentive to get other people signed up. It seems like that's maybe fading out a little bit.
Well, actually, thanks for asking. Not necessarily. I mean, green tags, a lot of people now call them carbon offsets, but the technical name is a renewable energy certificate or a tradable renewable certificate. But they're kind of hard to sell because it's an intangible. It's a kind of a feel-good type of a voluntary contribution, if you will. However, having said that, even though they are hard to sell, we think it's going to become easier here real soon because we actually poured the foundation for the first school educational wind turbine last week, and the tower and the turbine have been ordered and should be arriving here in the next couple of weeks. And so as a result, when that goes online, we already put in a small solar system on that school, and then the future wind green tag that we've been selling has we've sold enough to pay for this school wind turbine as well. And so it should be up, I'd say, in the next 3 to 4 weeks, depending on weather. And once it's up, of course, we're going to have a live webcam and an internet site that will be in real time tracking the amount of energy it produces and the amount of carbon offsets that are avoided as a result of the turbine. And I think it'll go a long way towards, one, helping all of the folks who have purchased Future Wind over the last year and a half or two, help them feel, you know, good about supporting that type of a project. And then, two, I think it will go a long way towards helping us to garner more interest in selling additional Future Wind green tags. And, by the way, there will still be that refer three bonus. So if you sign up three people as customers that buy Future Wind, which is tax deductible, by the way, it's $30 a month, then yours would be free because you would get a $30 commission every month. So that's not going to go away, but we've kind of downplayed the promotion and marketing of that product until we had this school wind project up and running and, you know, do the ribbon cutting ceremony with the press and all of that.
Mm-hmm. And how many kilowatt output would that be?
It's actually just the SkyStream wind turbine, but it's on a larger tower, and it's going to have some, as I kind of indicated, some of the real-time tracking and software. So the overall project is about a $20,000 project as opposed to a $14,000 most residential SkyStreams would. But that's the first one, and then the second one is going to be up in Hastings, Michigan, at Hastings Middle School, and the third is at Weed High School, and we've already started moving forward on Weed is in Northern California, by the way, and we've started moving forward on both of those. So probably by the third quarter of this year, we'll have the first three school wind turbines operational.
That's great. Let's talk about the solar for a minute.
Okay, great. With solar, we're really focusing most of our energies are on the thin film solar or solar roofing products. And the two manufacturers that we're selling the most product for are Unisolar, which is the solar shingle or the solar laminate that goes on standing seam metal roofs or on flat surfaces. And then products from Open Energy, and they are their primary U.S. offices in Southern California. It's manufactured up in Canada, but the Open Energy system is called SolarSave, and it comes basically in 4x8 sheets that is bonded onto a PV laminate, and it doubles as both the roof and as a solar system. And it's one of the more efficient panels out there. The SolarSave is, it has approximately a 19% conversion rate, so it's pretty good. Cost-wise, they're both fairly competitive, primarily because, again, it doubles as the roof, and you know, you don't have the additional racks. The installation time and labor is less than putting up more conventional monocrystalline or polycrystalline panels. So that's kind of where we're focusing. I know, by the way, Open Energy also has Sun Tile, which is another roofing product that goes on sloped roofs, and it looks like a slate roof or a flat ceramic tile, and it actually can be purchased in a variety of colors. So it's allowed us to go to more of a mainstream customer base for folks that are interested in maintaining the aesthetic appeal of their home and their roof, but they still wanted to make their roof, a revenue-producing stream or an energy-producing roof. So that's kind of where we've been focusing, although we are evaluating new technologies, including many of the nanosolar and polymer-type thin film products that are going to be coming onto the market here in the next 18 months. And
we're also concentrated solar.
Yeah, we've looked at some of that as well, and quite frankly, haven't had an opportunity to find a customer that's interested in giving that a try yet. But I think there's a lot of promise in concentrated solar, and I also think that there's a lot of promise in using solar thermal combined with a heat to electricity type of an application. And as you know, Sterling, there's a number of thermal to electricity technologies that are look real promising, some of which, we're looking at New Energy Congress, and so I'm real excited, quite frankly, about the solar thermal and the concentrating solar technologies, and I believe that those will get the cost of solar energy production not only competitive with wind, but I think even surpass it.
And back to this, the solar roofing scenario, could you explain a little bit further about the, when you talk about it's actually part of the structure, are we talking at what level? Are we talking the shingles? Are we talking even below that, actually the roofing in place of, for when you talk about 4x8 sheet, for example, are we replacing a 4x8 sheet of plywood on the roof? Or at what level are we replacing or doubling the structural integrity of a roof on this?
Okay, yeah, great question. The 4x8 sheets are designed solely for flat roof applications or up to a 10% grade. And so that really wouldn't be appropriate for very many residential applications unless there's a flat roof over the garage or some part of the home. That's more of a commercial application. And in that case, it's on a PV laminate. So many commercial roofs use some type of either a rubberized roof or a bitumen or something like that. And so if it's time for the roof to be replaced or in new construction, or if not, it can just lay down on top of the existing roof. And because it's a single ply PV laminate, it is in fact the roof, and it just heat welds. And I'm not a roofer, but I've seen these installations go in, and it heat welds right onto the roof, and it basically becomes the superstructure, the top layer of the roof. But there doesn't need to be anything underneath other than just the substructure of the roof, whether that's just the tar paper that's been laid down over plywood, or if it's a commercial building. Again, I'm not a roofer, so I don't know what types of materials go in before they lay the roof down, but it would be the final step. Back to the residential side, though, which is, really, I think, more in line with our listeners, is there's products that literally look like shingles. They're called solar shingles. They're available from Unisolar and a few other companies. And the way those are installed is simply you just take off some of your squares of composite shingles that look just like comp shingles, and you take off some of your squares of those and put these down. There is a section that is basically black polymer-type material that you nail down just like you would a composite shingle, and then you nail the next row down and then the next row down and so on and so on. And there's two wires that come out of either of the back of either one side of the of these 17-watt solar shingle panels, and then you just connect the wires in series, and then you have one roof penetration where you go down into the attic, and then ultimately into either depending on the design of the system, a splitter or a charge controller, or get down into the electrical panel where you have your inverter to obviously convert the DC power to AC, but it takes the place of your composite shingles. So if it's a new roof going in, you would put these on the southern facing slope of the roof, preferably on the very top of the roof along the ridgeline, and so they'd be the last, the last several rows or the last 10 rows, however many you're going to put on. And you would they do come in various colors as well, although the bluish color is the most efficient. And so you just lay the rest of your comp shingles down, put the solar shingle on, and it looks pretty seamless. And there's some pictures of what it looks like and also some installation pictures in our catalog and also in our back office that are available to our sales associates.
Now, on these shingles, I would think if I was installing these on my home, I would want them to blend in quite well, but not all areas of your roof are going to be ideal for solar collection. So you're going to have some shaded areas with, you know, little dormers that are coming out and whatnot. Do you have dummy shingles that look like this that are not solar to blend this in, or how does that work?
Yeah, great question. Generally, we'll be working with a roofing contractor that has a fair amount of experience with various different types of composite shingles, and we will work with the homeowner and the roofer to determine, you know, what type of comp shingle, if it's a new roof going down, what type of comp will look the best. I mean, the dimensions are pretty much the same. You know, comp shingles are pretty much comp shingles from a dimension perspective, but certainly the color can change. And so what we found is, in a lot of cases, the ones that look best are the types of roofs, comp shingles that have kind of a variance of color that look, that maybe have some gray, some slate, some blue, and a brownish color, whatever. And you've probably seen those. They look kind of a little bit speckled. And so those tend to look aesthetically, fairly pleasing, and they match fairly well with the solar shingles. But honestly, what we found is it a lot of times comes down to the family, and usually the at least in my experience, usually the woman has more of an opinion and is better. At least in my home, my wife's much better than I am at working with colors, and so it often comes down to what the homeowner wants when you lay the solar shingles side by side with some of the different samples of the other roof.
Similar to how they might in mowing the grass on the turf of a football field, sometimes they can get pretty creative, or a baseball diamond, in how the it's mowed out there. You know, it's all mowing, but they can sure do some fancy stuff with the way they run the direction they run the mowers and whatnot. So you could maybe do some fairly creative things with how you implement the solar tiles, maybe staggering them a little bit with some regular tiles rather than just having it, you know, this square section here is going to be our solar and then outside of it is going to be none. Is it conducive to that kind of creativity?
Well, it can be, but it would maybe complicates a little too harsh. It would take a little more time and labor for the wire runs to do that. It is a little bit easier to do the wiring if they're all kind of in one area of the roof. But and also you're not talking about a lot of surface area. I guess it depends on your perspective. But for a kilowatt of solar, with the solar shingles, it's going to take approximately 140 to 150 square feet of roof space. And so a lot of homes, if they're fairly energy efficient, are going to need 2 to 3, maybe 4 or 5 kilowatts of solar, depending on the climate that they're in and, you know, again, how efficient the home is and how large it is. So, you know, it's not a whole heck of a lot of space that we're talking about. And also, again, you do want to try to lean towards, southern facing, or if it's jiggered a little bit to the southwest or southeast, that's fine. And the best pitch for most solar would be a 7 to 12 pitch for those listeners who are thinking about building or designing a home, or if you're a do-it-yourselfer and wanted to put them on a shed that you're thinking about or something like that. But you certainly could, Sterling. It just might take a little more creativity with the wiring, but it certainly can be done.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk now about the biodiesel.
Okay, Greg. Well, that's actually probably the fastest growing, well, not probably, it is the fastest growing part of our business. And that's simply because there's a lot of demand right now for biodiesel, and there's more demand nationwide than supply. Part of that is being driven by the new fuel standards that were put in place for diesel. It's ultra-low sulfur. Is the diesel fuel that has finally been implemented here in the U.S., so we are finally caught up to the European Union. But what that means is when they take the sulfur out of the diesel fuel at the refinery, that process, and I'm not a chemical engineer, but what it does is it reduces the lubricity of the diesel fuel. In fact, it's a fairly significant drop in lubricity. And so some of our customers, like construction companies, tow truck companies, trucking companies, and so forth, they've been telling us that they're noticing or have been noticing before they started purchasing biodiesel, they started noticing that some of their pistons, they were losing pistons in their engines. They weren't operating as efficiently, and they were, you know, concerned about this issue. Well, the Department of Energy has done a lot of studies on biodiesel, and one of them has, they all say that it has great lubricity, but one of them is pretty impressive. It says that just a 2% blend of biodiesel will increase lubricity by 66% in the fuel. So it makes the engine, you know, run better or less wear and tear on the engine. The cetane rating, which is similar to octane in gasoline, the cetane rating is higher for biodiesel than it is for petroleum diesel or number two. So unlike ethanol, you don't get that drop-off in performance or miles per gallon so much that you do with biodiesel. You may have a slight drop in miles per gallon and a slight increase in nitrogen oxides with the emissions, depending on the type of engine and the blend you're using, but you'll have a significant reduction in particulate matter, you know, soot, and virtually no sulfur coming out of the biodiesel portion of the fuel. And so overall, your emissions are between 50 and 70% lower when you're burning biodiesel as compared to number two diesel. And then the last, driver to the demand for biodiesel is simply the fact that it's reducing, you know, has a direct reduction in our dependence on, you know, fossil fuels and foreign oil. And that rings true for a lot of people, and myself included. I've been a strong patriot, you know, my whole life, and I don't know if that's because I'm from the Midwest or what, but I actually my family's from California originally, but I just have always been very patriotic, and I have this passion for reducing our need for fossil fuels and foreign oil. But the biodiesel business is quite simple. We have a small biodiesel plant here in the Kansas City area that we're producing approximately. It's very small. It's about 1 million gallons a year of capacity, although we just ordered another couple of processing lines that will triple our capacity. And we're also, it's not really a franchise model, but it's similar to that in that we are looking for 10 locations to put in a 1 million gallon a year plant. And it's approximately a $25,000 process for the sales manager or franchisee. And again, it's not formally a franchise, but it's about $25,000 is what it requires. And we've got 10 of them that we wanted to do. Two of them are already picked out, one in Michigan and another one in Kansas. And we're looking for 8 more locations. But it allows the folks locally to use recycled cooking oil and animal tallow as the primary feedstocks and produce the biodiesel with a batch processor, and then ultimately we'll upgrade those to continuous flow processors to do the transesterification. But then you're able to sell the biodiesel at a price usually around 5 cents a gallon below the price for number two diesel. So you're actually saving your customers some money by selling them a better quality product. And you're going to make, anyone who's involved in this type of a process, you're going to make at least 10 cents, as much as 50 to 60 cents a gallon in profit after the cost of everything that goes into running that little micro business. So that's very exciting. And by the way, we do, we're pleased to announce we do have a funding source now that will allow us to build up to 20 large-scale, 40 million gallon a year biodiesel plants if and only if we are able, through our network of sales associates, if we're able to obtain contracts for biodiesel from large creditworthy customers. So that's kind of our focus right now, and we've got a lot of people really excited about making 10 cents a gallon commission on selling biodiesel on 3-, 5-, and 10-year contracts.
Now, on when you talk about making 5-10 cents a gallon, the fuel price is quite volatile in terms of whether it can go up or down. And I was reading an article recently at the bank, actually, talking about the prices of fuel, and the argument was that the Arabs don't want to see the price of fuel, of gasoline — this is different than diesel, but it's similar — they don't want to see it go much above $65 per gallon to barrel, because when it starts going higher than that, then you get this hue and cry for the alternatives for green, you know, this and that, and that doesn't, that's not good for their business. And so by keeping it just a little uncomfortable, you know, they make a healthy profit while not putting themselves out of business by making it too expensive, so that people are looking heavily into alternatives. And so
there
may be a bit of a difficulty in ensuring that this biodiesel, while it's profitable now, how sure are we that the prices are going to stay high in the future?
It's a great question. There is no certainty, quite frankly. I mean, I'm sick and tired of dancing with the Arabs, and we need to pull our head out of the sand here and get serious about energy independence, so we don't have to keep dancing like that, because it's near impossible to forecast what, you know, they're leading the dance. You know, we're if they're our dance partner, they're taking the lead, and we kind of have to follow, and that's not a position that I like our country to be in. And so from a biodiesel perspective, the way we've developed our business model is we're using a waste product, you know, the recycled cooking oil. We're getting our recycled oil. We have it under long-term contract from a number of the restaurants and hotels and malls and prisons and, you know, you name it. And so we're able to obtain it at, you know, very low cost under, and they're locked in for a long period of time. And so that allows us to protect a good portion of our feedstock. And then the secondary stream of feedstock for us is animal tallow, as I mentioned before. And here in Kansas City, you know, it's always been known as an agricultural hub, you know, the Kansas City Board of Trade and so forth. And there's big stockyards here and all that. So historically, we've had that reputation, although it's a much more cosmopolitan city today. And as agriculture is now probably less than 10% of our economy, that's a small part of it. However, my father has been very, very successful and very well known in the agricultural industry. For 35 years, he's been an agribusiness economist, and he's done quite well, and he sits on the boards of a number of very large agribusiness companies. And as a result of that, I've got access through my father and his network, I've got access to huge, huge quantities of animal tallow. And, you know, people are going to want to continue to eat chicken and poultry and fish and you know, beef and hogs and so forth. And so, protein is going to remain in our diet for the foreseeable future. And so there's always going to be that feedstock supply, and I'm able to also lock that in on a long-term basis. And so we're able, with our customers, to offer them either a fixed price for the biodiesel for a period of time of up to 10 years, and that's generally in the $2 per gallon range, not including transportation cost, and or we will index the price to a nickel a gallon below whatever the going published rate is on the day of delivery. So if fuel is, you know, is $2.50 a gallon today, then it would be $2.45 if we were to deliver to them today. But then it trades within brackets. We have a floor price and a ceiling price, and usually our floor is around $1.60 a gallon, $1.50 a gallon if it's a higher volume customer. And then there's a ceiling price of usually $3.50 a gallon. So if we see a dirty bomb in Saudi Arabia and the price of oil goes to $200 a barrel, our customers are going to be protected with their biodiesel portion of the fuel they buy from us will never go higher than $3.50, you know, even if everyone else is paying $8. And to protect, that protects them, and then to protect us, the floor is, as I indicated, $1.50 to $1.60, and we know that we can produce at least at a break-even level, even on these, in these smaller plants with our business model. We know we can at least produce and not lose money at that level, and then in our contracts, if it remains at a level where we're not economically able to produce at that level for an extended period of time, then we're able to, you know, to turn off the spigot, basically, and stop producing. But we've done quite a bit of, you know, market analysis and running sensitivity analyses and so forth, and looking at the forecast for soybean oil, which my dad has been forecasting, like I said, his staff for 30 years. And we believe that this is a solid, you know, solid business model, and it really protects our company, protects our sales associates, and most importantly, it protects our customers long term with a stable price for fuel. I mean, quite frankly, people could just get fed up. You know, gasoline and diesel, those are the only products that I'm aware of where the price literally changes every single day.
Mm-hmm. And this would lock it in so they could budget in their fuel price much better because they know what it's going to cost. Now, just for the listener's sake, can a person who's running a diesel engine run it on 100% biodiesel, or are there limitations to the percentage of biodiesel involved?
They can, but there are some limitations. Biodiesel has a higher cloud point, meaning in colder temperatures it will gel up, and so if it's not treated. And so if this person lives in a climate where it gets cold below, say, 40 degrees Fahrenheit, then it'll need to be either blended with number 2 diesel and or treated with an anti-gel additive such as Arctic Express made from Power Service. They've actually designed one specifically for our biodiesel. Their lab has been working with us for a while. So that's the first issue. Secondly is the vehicle itself. Most vehicles built after 1985 do not have any natural rubber fuel lines or gaskets and seals and things like that. Biodiesel has a pretty strong solvent property. So, for that matter, if you need to clean old greasy auto parts or something like that, just buy some biodiesel, put it in a bucket, and drop your parts in there, and it's a real good solvent. But because of that, it will gradually break down any natural rubbers. And so if there's, again, natural rubber in the fuel lines or seals or gaskets, then after a couple, 2 or 3, 4 years, or maybe faster, depending on some variables, you might have to replace those lines with a Vitron synthetic fuel hose. And so that would really be about it. Most vehicles can run 100% biodiesel. Of course, the guy who invented the diesel engine, Rudolf Diesel, invented it to run on a number of things, and in the World's Fair in France, he ran his diesel engine on peanut oil, 100% peanut oil. So it can run on 100% bio. The most common blend is 20%, although we have a lot of our customers here in the Kansas City area running 50% or 80% biodiesel, and the rest being number 2. So it certainly can be done, and I will tell you that when you're running higher percentages of biodiesel, the only other thing to watch out for is it will unclog the gunk. That's a technical term that we use here at Crystal Planet. It'll remove all the gunk in your fuel lines and your fuel tank because of that solvent property, so you may have to replace your fuel filter and oil filter after the first 500 miles.
Does having a mixture mitigate the solvent effect, and how low do you need to go in your percentage of biodiesel before you get rid of that solvent issue if you're worried about your natural rubber components?
Well, I'll tell you, the gunk issue will be noticed even at very low percentages, even 2%. I'll give you some examples. In Minnesota, they implemented a state mandate that all diesel fuel had to have 2% biodiesel in it, and that began, I believe it was 2003. And I'm glad they did it, and I'm glad it was there and not here, because there were a lot of issues. I mean, first of all, it's pretty darn cold up there, but secondly, even they noticed with such a low 2% blend that there were some problems with fuel filters clogging up. Some of that had to do with the diverse type of quality of fuel that's produced. Biodiesel can be produced pretty easily. There's a homebrew kit. We sell at Crystal Planet. We have a $3,000 garage kit that you can make your own 40-gallon batches of biodiesel. And so with folks doing that type of thing, the quality control usually isn't there. But so the solvent issue, even at 2%, will be an issue. But honestly, that's a good thing, because that'll clean out your fuel system, and needed to be done anyway. But as far as the breakdown of natural rubbers, I'm just going to tell you, I don't know, Sterling. I'd have to do some research on that. My educated guess from doing this for a year and a half would be that at a blend of 20% or less, it's going to take probably 2 to 3 years before you see any noticeable degradation of the natural rubbers. And if you're at a 5 or 10% blend, common sense would tell you it would take longer. I just can't tell you how long it might take.
Okay. I'd like to jump in on a tangential question As you talk about these different systems, from a business point of view, it seems like each one of these is a focused technology, meaning that typically in the industry you'll have a person who makes that one thing, the solar panels, for example, or the biodiesel, for example. You know, it's pretty hard to get your head wrapped around, you know, something like that and become an expert so that people trust you, so that you know what you're talking about. You know, what do they say, jack of all trades, master of none type of thing. So you need to be able to have enough focus to be able to know what you're talking about. Do you find that by covering such a wide diversity of areas that there's a bit of a dilution factor, or do you find that your individual reps kind of hone in on one area or another and become competent enough to be able to represent it well?
It's a great point. You nailed it with your last comment. Our reps will hone in on one area. They'll pick the one thing that gets them the most excited out of the big three, wind, solar, or bio. And you can probably tell by my tone of voice that I'm real excited about biodiesel. And although I'm a wind guy, that takes a back seat. And that's second place. And for me, solar is my third focus. And you're right. The saying goes, do one thing and do it well. And so that's really what we encourage our reps to do is pick the thing that they're most passionate about and or that they feel like they have the greatest chance of seeing commercial success in, because, you know, you can only do something so long because you love to do it if you're not making any money and it's taking up a lot of time away from family or work or other things. So we want to see our sales associates earn, you know, a profit, earn commissions, and make a living, you know, supporting the clean power revolution and saving the planet. And to be most effective, they do need to choose one thing. However, what we're finding is if you choose the one area, and let's go with biodiesel as an example, what I have found is with some of my biodiesel customers that I've personally signed up on, you know, in contracts and made sales to, with, you know, purchase orders where they order 5 or 10,000 gallons at a time or whatever, what I found is that in many cases, once I've got that relationship established, it's pretty easy to then go back to that person and say, hey, have you guys ever looked at the Fitch fuel catalyst for your trucks, your 18-wheelers? You know, you've got these big international engines, and this thing will you know, make them run a little bit more efficiently, 1.5% to 3.5% improvement in fuel economy. And that's another product that we sell that's in our catalog. Or I'll give you another example. We have a tire company that delivers tires to the Sam's Clubs all over the Midwest, and they're one of our biggest customers. And we then sold them tanks on their property to store the biodiesel. And so that was an equipment sale that we were able to make and made, you know, made some more commissions on that one. And then they started looking at our tankless hot water heater for their office building, you know, because they have a hot water tank. And, you know, it's a small sale. It's only, I think, $600. But it's going to save them, you know, $30, $40 a month or so in natural gas costs to put in an electric tankless hot water heater. And so, anyway, so, yeah, become focused on one area, but then you'll find that after you have a customer base built up, you can then sell them some of our add-on products easier than going out and trying to, you know, try to find a new customer.
Right. We've talked about three particular technologies in some depth, and we have a little more than 5 minutes left in our interview here. I would like to give you an opportunity to just mention really briefly, you know, maybe a sentence each on some of the remaining technologies that you have available. And one that I'm particularly interested in, I'm looking at getting one of these for my home, is that heater system that is not UV, but it's like radiant energy, so it uses much less energy. It's a more comfortable heat, uses much, very, very efficient. So could you give us a bit of a survey of some of the other products that you have available through your company and through your distributorships?
Certainly. I'll just talk about four of them, and we'll start with the crystal portable furnace. That product uses infrared heating, and so you're right, it is a more comfortable heat. It'll heat an area of about 800 to 1,000 square feet for approximately $20 a month. It has a thermostat on it, but there's no combustion. You just plug it into any outlet, set the thermostat, and it's about 10 to 15 times more efficient than an electric space heater because of the infrared type of heating, and it's got a Venturi tube heat exchanger. That product retails for $599. If you're a sales associate, you can get it for wholesale for a little over $400, and then also our customers can buy it on an easy pay plan for $65 a month times 12 months. The next product is our tankless hot water heater. I mentioned it briefly with the biodiesel customer, but it simply is a 220-volt electric water heater, and you replace a hot water tank. It heats water on demand. There's various sizes, but the standard size will accommodate two showers at once, and you never run out of hot water. It costs usually around $100 to $175 to install, and $519 retail, so around $650 or so is about what it will cost installed, and it'll pay for itself in about a year and a half. By the way, the crystal portable furnace will pay for itself usually in one winter. And it's great for areas, the portable furnace, great for areas like basements where it just doesn't get very warm. You know, if you've got a big screen TV or something like that and you want to warm up the basement instead of cranking up the thermostat and heating up the whole house, you put a couple of these in some of the rooms that don't get heated very well and reduce your overall energy needs. Next is our SoCool. It's a very efficient air conditioner, a two-ton air conditioner that also has their version 4 is unveiled next month, has a heating element in it as well. It has an efficiency rating of over 90%, operates at about 70% less energy than a conventional 14-SEER air conditioner. So super, super efficient, and it can operate, a DC version operates on 1 kilowatt of solar. So put just 1 kilowatt of solar shingles on your roof, and you could cool your home with this air conditioner. Pretty exciting product. And finally, the Green Machine. That's the Fitch fuel catalyst that I mentioned that can be put on any car, or truck, van, motorcycle, or anything in various sizes. It'll improve fuel economy by, we guarantee, 5 to 10%, depending on the type of engine, and it will also reduce the emissions. It's been EPA tested and certified to not avoid any warranties, and has over 20 independent laboratory tests that prove the thing actually works. It's been on the market for 8 years. So those are some other products that are available that we, again, those are the add-on products. After you lead with wind or solar or biodiesel, then you can add on some of these other energy-saving products.
And the return on investment time for the SoCool AC and the Green Machine Fitch fuel catalyst?
Thank you. Yeah, the Green Machine, generally the installed price is around $400, and you can pay for that. Again, all of these products you can buy an easy pay plan and pay for them over 12 months. Return on investment on the Green Machine is usually 9 to 12 months. The SoCool is usually about 18 to 24 months. And I think I mentioned already the other two.
Yeah, you did. Before we get to the very end of this show, I want you to talk about your book, The Clean Power Revolution, and the vision you have for clean power.
Well, I'd love to. The book is starting to get a little more attention, selling a little better on Amazon.com, but it essentially describes the Freedom Plan. It's a good overview. Of course, I'm a little biased, but it's a good overview of renewable energy in general. And then it gets into some more detailed specifics on what one can do in their own home. It talks about, for example, a crystal hydrogen system. But the Freedom Plan is a blueprint to convert America to 100% renewable energy. It can be done in approximately 10 years at a cost of $2 trillion. And I show, because my father's an economist, I spend a lot of time on the economic impact of this plan, the Freedom Plan, and it shows that it would save the U.S. economy at least $1 trillion per year. And, you know, to convert ourselves, it would only cost $2 trillion. So it's a two-year payback, which is just, you know, sickening and maddening. But that's really what it would cost using today's technology, and it relies primarily on three things. Large-scale wind energy, you know, primarily in the Midwest, where the winds are the greatest. Then it relies on hydrogen, producing hydrogen at night when all the lights are off and the peak demand is lower. The wind still blows. Well, hydrogen can be produced using water, and in the Midwest, particularly in Kansas, the largest natural gas field in the world is in western Kansas, the Hugoton Field, and it's running dry. You can inject hydrogen into the geologic formations. It squeezes out more of the natural gas or oil, and it's a great natural formation for hydrogen. Then you can move that hydrogen around the country in the existing natural gas pipeline infrastructure. that crisscrosses all over the western Kansas. In fact, it's got more natural gas pipelines than anywhere else in the world except for the Gulf Coast. And then the third thing it relies on is distributed generation, small solar, wind, geothermal, and energy efficiency efforts like we've been talking about on this call, and biofuels as well. I lump that into distributed generation. But those three things, and it lays it out step by step, shows how we can basically save the planet and give a huge shot in the arm to the U.S. economy.
Give us the websites that you run. The cleancrystalplanet.com, is it?
Yeah, it's crystal-planet.com, and crystal is spelled with a K, not with a C. And the parent company is Crystal Energy, which, by the way, we just filed to go public with the parent company. It'll be trading hopefully sometime in the next 90 days on Pink Sheets, pinksheets.com, Crystal Energy with a K. The book, you can go read about the Freedom Plan at www.thefreedomplan.org, or you can go to cleanpowerrevolution.org to learn a little bit more about the book.
I think the phone broke up. It was thefreedomplan.org. Is that correct?
Correct. Thefreedomplan.org or cleanpowerrevolution.org.
Well, thank you, Troy, for joining us. Troy Helming has been with us. He's the CEO of Crystal Planet, and you've been listening to Free Energy Now. You can see our upcoming and past shows at freeenergynow.net and join us every day at freeenergynews.com. And we thank you for joining us for today's show.
Thanks for having me, Sterling. It's been a pleasure and an honor.
Likewise. Take care.